Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, friends and family. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to Strength Talk with Ted Santos and Blair Nash. And as we've said before, and I won't sing today, Blair, but this is a talk show, a really provocative talk show that was made for men by men, except, ladies, you wouldn't want to miss it. And tonight, just like always, we have a hot topic. And before we get into that, I want to introduce my co-pilot, Blair Nash. Say hello, Blair, to everyone.
What's good, everyone? Hope everybody had a good week, and hope everyone is having a wonderful Sunday.
Cool. You guys up in Ohio, are you getting warm? You getting official spring yet or what?
Man, no. We got flurries today, dude. No one today. No such luck. Yeah. Now Friday, it was decent. You know, they said it's going to be good this week. Probably starting, I think Tuesday, we hit back into, I believe, the 60s. But yeah, and today.
Okay.
No, it's not. Today is not that day. It's cool. It's cold. There was flurries. Nothing to stay on the ground, but just cold enough to make you just say, I ain't doing no outside activities today. So. Yeah, you know, we gotta dial this up to just another cold weekend in Ohio, and hopefully next week, and I'm sure it'll be a zoo outside because we haven't had a really nice weekend in a long time. So,
really, we've hit in the past couple of weeks. We hit 70 degrees once, and that was, as you can imagine, you know, letting the dog off the leash in the park and just running and having a good time. So.
It's kind of like that here. Once it gets kind of at a certain temp, I mean, everybody kind of gets out and everything. But right now, if you go outside, people ain't outside doing nothing. You look around, like I look around the subdivision, I'm like, ain't nobody outside at all. So,
well,
you know,
at some point people say, all right, enough winter, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If it's just going to be cold like that, you know, you just kind of got to deal with it if you have stuff that you just have to have done. But, you know,
right.
I mean, that's the thing about Ohio weather is it's so flaky. It can be great one day, and then you turn around 2 days later and it's dropped 40 degrees. So you just never can tell, like, where the weather's going to go. So you just kind of have to, you know, play it by ear. Even when people come to Ohio, they're like, what's it going to be like? I'm like, I have no idea. I have no clue. It just, your guess is as good as mine. It's just, you just never know what the temperature is going to be. So, but like I said, this week should be decent, and, you know, we'll hope for the best. That's all you can do, right?
I mean, 40 degree difference, that's like desert weather, because I went to northern Arizona in February some years back, and I was driving from, I drove out there from D.C., and it was a snowstorm, so February was cold in D.C., and I figured it would just be cold in Arizona, and the northern part, because I was like, this part was even above sea level. It was like in the mountains, 6,000, 7,000 feet above sea level, and I get there, and the day is 80 degrees. At night, it was 30.
Oh, wow.
Because it was the desert. I was out in the desert. So, anyway.
Yeah, I've heard it's kind of like that out in, out in Vegas as well, where, you know, it's warm during the day, and then at night it gets real cool. So, I don't know.
Desert weather. Desert.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of that way.
All right. So, Blair, we've had quite a bit of comments on Facebook. It looks like people are concerned about this topic of is there anything, and I never said, and I don't think you said, there was something more important than love. And I'm not saying whether there is or isn't something more important than love. The big concern is, and I've said it on this show a lot of times, that fluent people, while many of the mainstream society, the majority of the society, have become discouraged with marriage, so they're marrying less often, and they have higher divorce rates than affluent people. So affluent, they continue to get married. They didn't stop getting married, and their divorce rate is already significantly low. So at some point, you have to start to ask, you know, whether you do research, whether you're married to someone or you've dated someone in that socioeconomic class, and you begin to see that there are things that happen there that are not happening in mainstream, and that's where the gap is. You know, I just wrote up something today, and I said, you know, it's easy to fall in love, and it's even easier to fall out of love. And people do that all the time. You fall in love, and then bang, you're out of love. It drops like a rock into the ocean. And
absolutely,
most people might think that, well, we fell out of love because they give you all these reasons. And I'm asserting, and this is what I want to talk to people about. So, is the gap before falling out of love, you know, after you fall in love, or is the gap before you even get to love? So is there something that is absolutely essential that most people don't do? And we're kind of coming like full circle with a few of our shows, because in the past we've talked about who should pay during dating, and we talked about should you have sex on the first date. And I know we had a woman from Canada who called about sex on the first date. She had a very interesting perspective. I'd love if she called in tonight. but the real question is, how do people get to know one another? So everyone knows if you're in a job interview, they're going to ask you questions. They're going to interrogate you. They can ask you anything they want if you want the job. So why is a job interview more important than allowing you into my intimate life? I mean, I think one thing that people don't really fully appreciate and comprehend is a strong word, but I'm sticking with it, is that the choice of a spouse, significant other, life partner is the most important choice you'll make in your life.
Right.
It just is. It affects how you raise your children, where you live. It affects your job and how well you do or don't do on your job. So why would you be more concerned about having a thorough interview or interrogation of someone that you're looking to hire as an employee? Why would that be more important than looking to hire someone to share love in your life and intimacy and raising children? Why that would seem way more important to want to interview and know the person. So really, we want to talk about how do people really get to know one another, and what are the things people look for? This show is going to be somewhat educational, and it's not, ladies, I promise you, if you've ever felt we've beat you up before, today is not it. This is a human challenge, because people get divorces, and those people are responsible for making it work. So what's happening on the front end that is so missing, like it's just not there, that all the important elements that hold the relationship together are not put in place in the beginning. And we believe that love conquers all. The Beatles said all you need is love. And a lot of people have found out the hard way that you need much more than that. So I'd love it if we have a ton of people calling. Maybe we should make this more like a forum and keep some people on the line, so that we can really talk this through. I know some people have concerns or problems with some of the things that I've stated in putting this out. But you know, some past topics have all been about communication, and that's really what this is going to come down to: communication skills.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let me do this. The title tonight is "What Comes Before Love and Intimate Relationship." Our call-in line number is 323-642-1387. Again, for those listening, 323-642-1387. I have a couple things that I want to add to it, but let me first try to get to one of our first calls. We're going to go, first of all, to area code 212. 212, you're live and on the air.
New York. You have a song?
212.
I'm just listening. I'm listening. Yeah.
All right. Perfect. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
No problem. Okay, so next we're going to go to my area code, which is area code 614. 614, you're live and on the air. 614. 614. Okay. Maybe that person is listening too. So, okay. So we'll come back to that. We'll come back to the callers and everything. You make a very good point, Ted, in the fact that a lot of people don't know, they're not understanding a lot about relationships. I would even put myself in there and saying that there were a number of things about relationships that I didn't understand. We tend to kind of want to do things our way, and then we kind of want to go back and say, well, you know, okay, that didn't work out. And then we get into another relationship, and we never, hardly ever do you find people that really follow the pattern and follow the strategy with which to say, this is the more opportune way with how to deal with your relationship. Don't let a man do this. Don't let the woman do this. Don't, you know, there's do's and don'ts in the relationship. And so what we tend to do is want to do things our own way and then want to go back and either we don't want to hear something that, you know, another person has to say about it, or we don't really realize the long-term effects that it has in helping and in hindering you from getting a good relationship. So, I do coaching, and I talk to women all the time, and I tell them, like, I show them kind of a game plan, like, okay, this is how really you should execute this. This is how you should really go about doing this. There's plenty of, you know, data that shows this is the opportune, ideal way to have a relationship. You do this, you do this, you don't allow a guy to do that. And it's just like, you know, they're like, okay, yeah, that sounds good, and then go about doing it. And I think that women need to understand that. I think they need to understand, you know, relationships are not just about love. They're more than being about love. They're about, can you connect with that person and I don't want to say in a fiscal way, but do you and that person have very similar thoughts as far as money? If you are the person who's running through cash and this other person is a spender, guess what? You're going to have problems. I talk all the time about my grandparents, in that my grandfather, he had, you know, plenty of money. You know, I would almost say, and this was back in the 70s and 80s, I would probably gather to say he was probably a millionaire. He was very, very well off. But because he was with my grandmother, who was, you know, the spend all, you know, she just, as soon as he got it, she was ready to spend it. He died, and both of them died owing money on their house, you know.
Wow.
And so, that's the reality. And so it's important that we understand, do you and that person vibe financially? Because if you're, you know, marrying someone and they're not looking to save, and they're not looking to, you know, make any sort of, you know, like, yeah, this is about our future and whatever, and they're always looking to, like, well, what about our vacations? What about, you know, I want new tile out in the second bedroom. And what about, you know, I want to upgrade my diamond ring. If they're always about that, or the guy, or vice versa, if the guy is always like, I saw a motorcycle I want, or I saw this flat screen, $2,000 flat screen TV I want, and then something else after that. If you don't realize and align yourself with someone who is actually on par with what you're doing, it's going to be a disaster. So I think to the point what you're saying, Ted, people have to understand that, yes, it's about chemistry. I got to be able to look at you and be turned on, no question. But that's a small part of what a relationship should be about. It's a lot more than that. So, yeah.
And so, you know, you're bringing up good points, because the real thing is, how do you know that before you walk down the aisle? How do you know this person is going to burn through cash?
Right. I think, in my opinion, I think that you kind of, there's some telltale factors and things you look at. You can look at, I mean, before you get down the aisle, you look at, you know, what are their spending habits? You know, if a person is all, you know, if you see them and they're always, you know, they're buying golf clubs, and next week they're going out and they're buying a purse, and the next week they're going out and buying. If you see a person's habits that are, you know, in the manner that they're always spending, then that's kind of a sign that, you know, And, you know, I think you have to look at that. If you look at that and say, okay, they're doing this, and they're buying all these expensive items, they're being a consumer all the time, but they're not saving, then, you know, yeah, it's you can pretty much tell. You know, you can tell people who, you know, all they care about is designer stuff. You know, I gotta go get, you know, some retro Jordans, or I gotta go get that new purse, or I gotta get bundles for my hair, or, you know, all these different things. You know, I gotta go get, you know, I gotta have them True Religion jeans. You know, one of the problems that we have as blacks is that we always stay in the consumer mindset. We are always looking to see what we can purchase and kind of looking over the fence like, oh, they got those Rock Revivals. I got to go get Rock Revivals now. Or, oh, they got this. And, you know, then when you look up down the road when they're 65 and they don't have even $100 to put together, that's when you start to realize, like, man, you've really played yourself in a lot of ways. You know, we had a guy, I don't know for any of you who were listening, we had a gentleman on the show probably, I don't know, 5, 4, 6 weeks ago. He was a financial advisor, and he was, you know, just mentioning some of the things about, you know, black consumers and some of the things that we need to pay attention to. And one of the things that he had mentioned was just about how our mindsets are not only the fact that we may not have the liquid assets or liquid cash to be able to do certain things, but the fact that we're not even at step one in realizing that we actually have a problem. So how can you get a people to understand something when they won't even acknowledge that their consumer problems and the way that they spend money and their outlook on money is flawed and messed up? So that's, I think, the challenge there is, how do you get us to really see, like, you know, we got a world of problems, and it's not going to majestically work itself out. You know, I think that's kind of a belief and a myth, is that, you know, if I just keep doing what I'm doing, I'll hit a lick one of these days. I'll be okay. You know, it's got to be something that you strategically do.
Well, so the bigger problem is not realizing that you didn't create the consumer culture, that you are just part of you are a micro and a macro. So U.S. culture, no one has any monopoly on consumerism in the U.S. You look at Asia, you look at other countries, and they save much better. So it's not a black community thing. This is a U.S. mindset that it plagues, because if you doubt me, just look at anyone of any race who wins the lottery, a major lottery ticket. They're worse off than they were before they won the lottery ticket. So that has nothing to do with race. So if you're going to do anything, first you have to look at the culture you live in and look at how much the culture, and when I say culture, you need to start looking at what your brain is consuming in the media and what your brain is consuming with your friends and family, and by that I mean the conversations they're having. And at some point, you've got to step back and look at, you know, what has this done for the U.S. in general? You know, we talk about bubbles in real estate, and bubbles in credit cards and student loans. All that is just consumer, consumer, consumer. And, you know, there are people who are just a paycheck away from being financially in trouble because they buy so much. So you got to look at the culture you live in and ask, do you want to be driven by the culture, or do you want to drive your own lifestyle? And that gets us to the topic, which is, if you're driving and looking for a lifestyle, who are you going to invite into your life, and how do you know who you're inviting into your life?
Mm-hmm. But again, I think it goes back, and very, very valid points, very good points. It goes back to, you know, what you have to be, you have to see yourself as being in a scenario that you have to make changes. I mean, it's what drives what I do. You know, one of the challenges of, you know, what I do, and I'll just use myself for a second, is not so much the fact that is what I say or my content, you know, on point. Because 9 in 10 times, it's very on point. It's very logical, very common sense, very kind of de facto what I say. I don't really try to reinvent the wheel or make anything that's, you know, or make anything that's hard to understand. I really just come from a very pragmatic sense and try to help people. But what the challenge of it is getting people to see that, yes, you not only did you mess up, but you're still messed up. That's the challenge. Because and I just use black people in it as a whole, we already have these kind of deflective methods that we use with everything we do, whether it's our finances, whether it's our relationships, pretty much everything. You know, if you speak to them about the church they go to or the fact that they don't go to church, we have these built-in responses that we've learned and we use in everything in our life. That it's the moment you say to somebody, hey, the way you're doing it probably is not a good way. We are ready. We're like, well, what about you? And it's like, we're not talking about me right now. We're not talking about, you know, we're not talking about my mama. We're not talking about my friends or anybody that I know. We're talking about you. And I think that's the struggle, Ted, is getting people to see things and getting people to kind of turn the light on and come out of the darkness. That's the struggle. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's still exactly what I said. That's still U.S. culture. The United States is more focused on political correctness, and now more than it's ever been in the past. I mean, all you have to do is make friends with people in Europe or even Latin America, and their ability to speak openly about things. It's mind-boggling that there are so many things that people are uncomfortable addressing. Even talking about sex amongst adults it's unbelievable how people can get offended. And I know we probably have a few test tube babies walking around. I think the first one was born around 1980. Except for the rest of us, to my knowledge, we all exist because two people had sex. Unless your parents were at an orgy, then that's a whole different topic. I think we all are here because of two people had sex. And we see it as like such a terrible and offensive. Talking about sex, money, religion, we're so focused on political correctness that it makes it difficult to say to someone, the behavior you're displaying is not in your best interest. And you and I have talked about this. They don't get that until that behavior has gone bankrupt on them and they see that they're now at the bottom and they need to do something. That's an unfortunate position to be in, but that's very much part of the broader U.S. culture. And so I was saying is that you've got to learn to take a step back and look at the culture you're in and the conversations people have, including the media, and how much of it is encouraging you to continue to stay in that kind of behavior. So, you know, I know people say they have free will, but you only have free will to the extent your environment allows you to have it. So there's some things that you just don't talk about because they seem like ridiculous conversations because the culture you're in doesn't really provide space for you to talk about that. So,
exactly.
People don't realize how constrained they are.
Okay. Let's try to get to another call real quick. The calling number is 323-642-1387. Again, 323-642-1387. We're going to go to area code 314. 314, you are live on the air. 314. 314, you are live and on the air. Okay. All right, so we're going to keep on rolling.
Can't be that difficult because all these people who were talking, like pulling out big guns, on Facebook. I'm really surprised that they're not coming in with these big guns that they have. I really wanted to discuss this in real time.
Okay. Well, and I think what happens, you know, and you and I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago, and I told you that I think people get, you know, they get skittish when it becomes radio. When you're on social media, you kind of think about, you know, what you're going to say, whether it's for even for 30 seconds. But when you are kind of in what we call real time, it becomes a whole different ball of wax. So I think people become, you know, like, you know, kind of deer in headlights, like, oh, my God, if somebody answers, asks me a question, I got to be ready for it. Like on the red, I gotta be ready for it right away.
Hey, you're muffled, and, Blair. You're muffled. Your voice is muffled.
Okay, I did move it closer. My apologies. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. I was just saying that I think that the idea and notion of having to ask a question and answer, you know, somebody asking you a question, you have to answer a question very quickly, is kind of scary for most people. So let's try to take one more call. We're gonna go to area code 404. 404, you're live and on the air.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Tommy, this is Carell.
Hey, what's going on? This is Carell.
Hey, Carell, how you doing, man?
Yeah,
it's great. Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing good, sir.
Good. So our topic tonight is what comes before love and intimate relationship. You know, we kind of dropped a couple of things that we were thinking about. What are your thoughts?
Qualifications, things that are objective,
things that
qualify you for love. Love is a verb. It's things that it's stuff that you got to do, stuff that I have to do. Let me talk about me. It's stuff that I have to do, things that my father taught me. You know, son, get an education, get a career, buy a house, buy a car, be able to invite a woman into something so that you guys can grow and continue to build together. And I think that in the black community, I don't think that has been taught. That, you know, I don't think that's been taught. That love, you know, it's all great to be intimate and sex and all that if you're looking for a conquest. But intimacy doesn't mean anything if you're trying to build something. And you're trying to build something with somebody. You know, I'm a movement by myself, but I'm a force when we're together. You know. And so I think that community, we don't qualify for love. We don't qualify to make babies. We don't qualify for these things, and therefore it's given freely. And anything that's given freely, which requires no work, turns into a cancerous cyst that spreads and destroys everything. That's just my opinion.
So talk to me, Carell. Talk about how you qualify. I mean, you're married. Some people may have heard you before. So you're married. Your wife is an orthopedic surgeon, correct?
Right.
Right. So, I mean, so you could say, you know, people could say, well, I find you physically attractive. Someone might even say what comes before love is animal instinct. You know, that's good if you're looking for just sex, but... So let's say the animal desire instinct is there. You find them attractive, and they have all the educational credentials. But you and I know there are lots of people who have educational credentials, and their marriages don't work. They still may not have qualified the person. So before you even get to love, I wrote up something today. It's like, you know, and I said it in the beginning of today's show, people fall in love easy and they fall out of love even easier. And so what are the things that you have to fall in like with the person? And someone has some movement and background noise that it might be distracting for the listener. So can you
That's
either be on mute for a second? Okay. So, Carell, what I'm asking you is, how did you qualify? I mean, you've been on this show before, and you talked about how you interrogate, and you have no fear of interrogating a woman to find out what you want to know. So what are the things that you look for to make sure a woman is qualified?
The first thing I look for is did this woman grow up with a solid father in the household? Because I found in my experiences, as minimal as it is with women, women who grow up with a solid father in the household can readily availably understand my role and my position as a man. The second thing I look for was an education. I firmly believe as a black man in American society and one who lived in seven different countries, I lived in seven different countries, and I visited over 30 different countries. I understand here in America, poverty isn't the lack of it isn't a lack of materialistic things. It's the absence of opportunity. And I know here in America that if a woman has an education as well as I, when we speak to our children, we can speak in unison, because those are one thing. That is one thing that will qualify our offspring for an opportunity to compete for an opportunity. Mentally, I need a woman that's mentally fit. You know, I couldn't date a lot of women with a bunch of bad history in men, because now I'm being blamed and or breaking down walls of individuals that I don't even know. But if you had about 5, 6, 10 different boyfriends and you're the only constant and all those men ain't shit, you're not mentally ready for a man like me. Financially, we don't have to be on the same level. When I met my wife, I was finishing my last tour in Afghanistan. I come home, you know, and I meet this woman that we've been talking, and our mutually mentor introduced us, and, you know, she was in residency. Hell, the secretary makes more money than a resident, even though she works big surgeon. You know, she's the secretary gets paid more money than her, and she's out there operating on people. So I had to hold down two households. You know, I lived here in Atlanta. She lived in Galveston. From a third year all the way up to her fifth year and into her fellowship, I had to hold it down. So I had to have a woman that understood that, hey, look, love don't pay no bill. There are certain things we can do at this moment. With one income, there are certain things we can't do. You know, now her salary quadruples that of mine as a small business owner. But, you know, she still understands the value of budgeting, understanding money, legacy leaving. And, you know, I don't give a damn what nobody say. Love don't pay no bills. And if you want to go do this and that, then you have to budget for this and that. Physically, it is very important for me to be physically attractive to my woman. All right?
Right.
I got to stay in shape. She got to stay in shape. I want to be able to look at my woman and be like, baby, go take that shit off. Go put some on and show some cleavage. Go put a little tighter dress on, you know, show your little onion. I like that. You know, when a woman understands, I feel that when I date a woman who understands that there are certain needs and aspects of a man that I need to be, that need to be fulfilled, then we can be in love. We can not only love, but be in love. I don't want to just love my wife. I want to be in love with my wife. You know what I'm saying? So what I had to do first is qualify myself for that. You know, I can go out and get, and you, some of you guys have been my Facebook friends for a long time. You saw me date women over the years, and you were like, that dude's 5'7". What is he doing that 6-foot model? But that's all they had. That's all they had. That's all those women had to offer, was somebody that looked good. And until I qualified and got myself right, I couldn't even compete for somebody like the wife that I have today. So, you know, even getting myself right, I had to look for a woman who also equally yoked and prepared herself for me.
Wow.
And even though I might love her today, like I love her, I know that she might not love me tomorrow. So only thing I can do is love her enough to do right by her and keep her. And if she decides to leave, love her enough to let her ass go, but continue to prepare myself for somebody that want a career builder. That's it.
Right. So all right, let me just – so what I heard you say is some of the things that you look for to qualify a woman and you have a wife was, did she come from a two-parent household? Did she have education? How does she manage money and budget? Does she understand money management, the importance of it? And I know in the past you've said that your wife made a really big issue of health, and that seems to be something that you all have in common, that support. So it wasn't, you mentioned mentally fit, but there's also a physical fitness that's important, that supports continued growth in the relationship, right?
Oh, absolutely. In the physical part, from my wife's perspective, Like, her dad is, what, 60? And he looks about 35. So she grew up
wow.
with her dad making her and her sister ride bikes for 5, 6, 7, 8 miles and run up. But as an orthopedic surgeon, you have to go in there and cut off people's legs and fingers and toes. You start with a toe. Then you got to cut off a foot. Then you got to cut off below the knee. Because in the black community, we have a predisposition to diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, high blood pressure, all that stuff. So, you know, my wife said, hey, mate, I haven't seen your six-pack in 2 years. So I'm thinking to myself at 38 at the time, well, goddamn, I'm married now. What the hell I need a goddamn six-pack for? You know, but what she was telling me was, hey, you came into this picture looking this way. And what I learned to respect from my wife is if she holds me to that standard, she's also in the gym. She's working out and doing the things that I'm doing. And, you know, and I appreciate that because I hear a lot of, you know, we fantasize or we uplift the out of shape person. Girl, he should love you for the size that you are. Girl, he should love you anyway, which is totally not true. If you read Dr. Harley's book, His and Her Needs, How to Fairproof Your Marriage, he talks about how being, you know, aesthetically pleasing to a man, being sexy, being a trophy wife, for lack of better terms, is very important. And what we do in our community, you know, for example, when I go out with my wife, it's all white male doctors. Their wives might not have a damn job, but you know what? They are goddamn Stanford wives. You understand what I'm saying? And I said, man, look at these. These women look like damn it, they're 50. She looked 25. They understand the importance of I need to look good for my man, not necessarily so I can compete against other women, but I want to be in good physical health for myself. And so when my wife broke that down to me, like, hey, I ain't seen your six-pack in 2 years, that meant I need to get my ass back in the gym. I need to work out. If I want her to look good, I got to look good. And that just that checks and balance and holding each other accountable without making, you know, without getting offended because somebody's telling you the hardcore truth.
What I think, and let me give the number one more time real quick. The number is 323-642-1387. Again, 323-642-1387. So I think one of the very important things to understand about relationships, and you mentioned about your wife was mentioning, you mentioned that your wife was saying to you that, hey, baby, I haven't seen your six pack. Where'd all the flatness go and everything? And I think there's just kind of a difference that I mean, I talk to women all the time, and you know, one of the things that I've noticed with women is, you know, they say, well, tell me the truth. This is kind of a myth that I think women perpetuate. They say, tell me the truth. But then when you say the truth, it's like I'm offended by that. And I think this is where men kind of always end up in these landmines because they say, if you want a second woman, tell me the truth. Well, we know that's not true. We know 99% of women aren't going to be cool with that. If you tell a woman, if you see me getting weight, you're putting some weight on, then they know. You know women ain't going to be cool. If you talk about their hair or talk about their personality or their attitude, anything that says you are not somehow up to snuff, it's a problem. And I think what has to happen in relationships is we have to, especially for women, I think we have to get to a point where you shouldn't be abused. You shouldn't have a man saying to you, you look horrible. But I think if a man comes to you and says, hey, you know, yeah, you have put on about 25, 30, 40, 50, 100 pounds since we've gotten together, then you have to be willing to hear that and not run into a cocoon because what's happened is we've allowed our black women to kind of be insulated and not allow them to have any sort of accountability, responsibility, or any level of criticism about thing about themselves. Yes, the world might say, well, we get it from everywhere. We get it from, you know, why? Okay, well, so does everyone else in this world. That's reality. But I think we have to understand, especially for myself. Go ahead.
You know what the important part about that is, sir? And I tell my wife this all the time. Yeah, we can say that about the women, and you're absolutely right. But unless we as men are leading. My
mm-hmm.
wife says, hey,
right.
Why don't you go to the gym anymore like you used to? I said, well, I was the smallest guy in high school. I got in a lot of fights. I worked out. I played football, wrestling, soccer. I went to military college. I had to work out to compete. against less than 1% minorities at this college, North Georgia, all right? And then I went into Army, and I commissioned in 2000 as second lieutenant. 2001, I was in Iraq and Afghanistan, some other places. I didn't know when I was going to fight. And so you fast forward from 1992 to 2003, I come back home to the States, you know, and I'm 178 pounds, 3% body fat. I worked out for a reason. Now I'm married, and I don't have to work out too hard. I'm not fighting nobody. I'm not at war. You know, I think that we have to lead. Leadership is a process of influencing individuals, accomplish a mission through purpose, motivation, and direction. What purpose am I providing my wife to work out? What motivation am I providing my wife to work out? And what direction? And at the Master Fitness, can I go in and say, hey, babe, this is how you do it? A lot of times we men, we, you know, and you know me, I am a man's man. But I also understand we men, time we tell our wives or our girlfriends, you need to be doing this, and we not leading by example. And so she's looking at us like, why are you telling me I need to cut back on my wine, or I need to cut back on this and that? But, you know, you over there drinking, hanging out with the boys, you got a pot belly.
Right. You sitting there with jelly hanging off your chin.
Or you hanging out with a bunch of dudes that we know that are slanderers, you know? Are we going to lead by example? But the key to me is, as a man, when I speak to my wife, am I leading by example, number one? But number two, is she used to being in a household with a man that says, okay, babe, got it, what you think? Okay, got it, okay. Well, this is what we're going to do. Let's execute. This is the plan.
Uh-huh.
And so, my wife
Carell,
said, what's up, she said.
Go ahead, your wife said.
She said that, you know, she said one day early in our relationship, she said, Carell, I know a lot of women that would love to be with a man like you. I said, no, you love a lot of women who think they want to be with a man like me, because there's some things that we talk about, and there's some things we do that these women are not ready for. Like, for example, Ted, you're my Facebook friend. You see this house that I bought for my wife, building all this crap, you know, for a year and a half. I've been busting my ass. You know, I own the real estate company, so I'm out building these houses for clients, and, you know, I got deadlines. But when I come home, I got to do this damn house. 8,000 square feet is only two of us. You know, and I'm just busting my butt, and now people are seeing the final results. But what these people don't understand, that when me and my wife is talking, and I'm trying to teach her this ain't no damn HGTV, what guys like me do, they don't understand this. And you know, and I'm going to say it. I said, one time she was telling me about what her friends were saying, and I looked her dead in the face. I said, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. This is what I've been doing since I was 7. This is what we need to do.
Right.
And she stopped, she looked, she did her research, she said, baby, you're right. Okay, we got it. Now, if this woman did not grow up with a father that I've witnessed sometimes say, Leticia, this is not your concern. Go downstairs and study for your board. And she says, yes, Dad. And she went down to study for all boards. When she was telling me, oh, I thought you was going to pack this, pack that. I said, me and your dad is having this conversation. And so fast forward 3 years later, I'm telling her about this house that, you know, I'm busting my ass working on. I'm not making no money off of it on my own stuff. And I'm like, you don't know what the F you're talking about. This is what we need to do. This is what I am an expert in. When I cut my hand or damn cut my leg off and you say, babe, come here, I'm going to put this, that, and the other. I said, what do I say? She said, you don't say anything. I said, you know why? I said, because I didn't graduate from medical school, 5 years of residency, 1 year of fellowship, and 18 years up until this point where you're in private practice. So when I call on Dr. Bilbrew, I shut the hell up and I let you execute. So I said, your friends or women that you think would want a man like me, they don't want a real man because I am not a protective liar. I'm not going to protect your feelings. I'm not going to sugarcoat things. You are my partner. I'm going to be dead and gone years before you are dead. So I need you to be prepared to carry on the nucleus of the black family, and that is us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I broke it down.
Yes. You made a very good point in that, yeah, people women may, because I know you and you're a handsome dude, And women may see him like, oh, he's got himself together and, you know, got his paper right and whatever, military man, et cetera. And you hit something, and I almost jumped out the room, where you said that, yes, they think they want the kind of guy like you, but then when the reality comes and they realize that, yeah, that means that you got to keep your little mouth shut sometimes. That means you got to keep, you know, you got to, you know, acquiesce and get in line. That means you got to keep your, you know, your weight together, your hair together, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of our women ain't really trying to do that because they believe that they believe that essentially they should be they believe that they should be able to do whatever they want. They should be able to be whatever size. They believe that they should be able to say whatever the heck they want to. And most men who they really they want aren't going to allow them to do that. That's one part of the reason why they stay single, because it's not something that most of these men are willing to put up with. They're not, you know, bump the fact that you're cute. After a while, that wears off. So the men just kind of get to a point of like, you know what, I'll just trade her in once she starts getting a little lippy or doing whatever. And that's kind of, you know, like you said, most women ain't going to deal with a guy like you. And so what they do, you know, we talk a lot about alpha and beta males. And typically what women do is they're going to get a beta male and then tell the world he's an alpha, that he's really a leader, he's a warrior. And he ain't. Most men know. Most men can look at pretty much everything about that guy and see that he is that lame that you said that you didn't want. So, yeah, you're right. They don't want you. You know, they don't want a guy like you. You're 100% right.
And, you know, I am 100% okay with that.
Correct. Correct. So I want to address something that you're saying. So what we're really talking about are what are the things that a man and woman need to intentionally. You talk about purpose, intention, and if you have a purpose for your marriage and coming together. I mean, if you're just looking to have sex and go to the movies and have children, you don't have to get married. You can just have a good time together until you fall out of love. But if you're looking for more than that, you talked about leadership. So woman was looking for things in a man, and me listening to you, one of the things that she might look for, if she's really looking for a guy who's going to hold himself together, how will she know if this guy is actually a leader? Sort of like Blair is saying, alpha and beta. Like, I don't necessarily want to deal with the alpha aspect, because you can be an alpha and not be a leader, or an effective leader. So I really want, I'm asking you, Carell, how would a woman know that the guy she is going out with on the first or second, third date is a leader?
Well, is it possible for a woman to know that on the second, third, and fourth date, right?
At some point, she needs to know. She's going to fall in love with this. At some point, she's going to start having feelings. So, and if that's something that she needs to have, see, Carell, there's a list of things. How does this person feel about managing money? How does this person feel about their health? It's probably the biggest thing out of everything we can list is integrity. And at some point, you have to start discerning whether this person has that before you get to love. Because otherwise, women will say, well, you understand emotions, and I fell in love. There has to be a way for a woman, just like as a guy, there are ways for you to know if this woman has integrity.
Well, you got, first, I believe an individual, and this goes for men or women, I believe an individual has to be that which they desire.
Bang, when you are,
I'm a United States former Army officer. I am a military brat. I know what an Army officer is supposed to be. I know what an enlisted soldier supposed to be. I build houses. I can walk into your house if you got a builder, and I can tell you what's bull crap, what's not. So therefore, I can walk into my house and say, so between my wife and I, we talked to each other on Facebook and all this crap from June until August. From August until October was October was the first time I saw her. So what she was able to do was go back and look at everything I ever wrote, everything I ever said. And she said, I loved you and knew you before I met you, because everything you said, you either did it or you're doing it. And that's the man I prepare myself for. So that is self-evident today. What we don't do these days, we don't vet our sources. We don't qualify ourselves, and we don't qualify others to be intimate, to be in our lives, to grow. All right? Hey, I'm 40. I'm 41. My wife will be 33 on Tuesday. Do you think we got time to mess up and start over? So I didn't have time to sugarcoat and to tell her shit that didn't matter. Or look, listen, either you is or you ain't. And so what we don't do, especially in the black community, we don't qualify for. We got to qualify to drive. We got to qualify for a job. We got to qualify for everything. But we don't qualify for somebody to come in and occupy the most important aspect of our lives, and that's time. But when you do, right, especially our sisters, when you do get a quality man, what do most women, watch this, when you go on Facebook, for all the women that's listening, when a woman finds a quality of man, even if she had a quality of woman, and she says, this is a good man, and I love him, and blah, 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 no responses. When they come on Facebook and they say, this dude ain't shit, you get a whole bunch of, girl, I told you, girl, I knew it, girl, you know. So we cater to the nonsense. So it makes qualifying in the hard and the common sense out of this world and very hard to get and accomplish. You tracking what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So
absolutely.
So just to summarize it, I have to be that which I desire. And if I am that which I desire, I recognize, because that person went through the same steps, that person went up that rough side of the mountain like me. Now, how can I get in there and be value-added? If I want my wife's hair to look good, goddammit, I got to put money in some ingenuity to it. If I want her to wear a certain amount of clothes, although a lot of dudes such as myself hate going shopping, I got to put some money. I got to go walk around that goddamn mall 3 or 4 hours on a weekend to say, babe, this is when we go out and represent Team Bill Brew, this is what you need to look like. Now, on the flip side of that, I got to have a woman that's responsive to, I'm going to dress for my man. I'm going to dress for my husband. Now, a lot of women would say, well, girl, that N-I-G-G, whatever, and he telling you how to dress? He even, girl, that, and they single as hell. And those women listen to those single as hell women, and what they do is say, you going to wear rain boots? Yeah, well, we going to function with my builders and contractors and investors that's putting millions of dollars on the table. You can't go in there looking like Cardi B. You need to go in there looking like Michelle Obama.
Right.
Well, my friend
so wait,
said,
wait, hold,
well, you go be with your friends over there. Leave me the hell alone.
Right. Right.
Hold on.
Hey, Ted, let me switch to another call real quick.
That's exactly what I was
going to
say. Exactly.
Yeah, 323-642-1387. We're going to take another call from another one, area code 404, which is Atlanta. 404, you're live and on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing? My name is Jeffrey.
Right.
And I'm a brother of Ted. I'm all right, Ted. That's my brother right there, y'all.
Hey, how you doing, man? Thanks for calling.
Hey, I'm doing okay. I'm not going to be as talkative as you guys. I'm just basically listening. But I was listening to you guys kept saying or asking the question about what does it take for a person or a woman to get to know somebody. And the only way I could really say that's going to take time. It's not going to be a few dates or anything. You're going to be able to tell how somebody's going to be and how they live and how they spend money. You're going to have to spend some quality time with that person. Like, you don't know, you know the saying they say, you never know somebody until you live with them. It has to be something like that.
Uh-huh.
Or it has to be a situation where you spend hours with a person so you can really see how they get down before you really decide to make a relationship with that particular person. But that's the only way you're going to find out. there's nothing that's going to happen on the one or two dates. It's impossible.
Well, right. Well, okay. We're not necessarily saying one or two dates, but see, Carell said something important. If you're not that person, so if you are, if you don't have any leadership and you're looking for someone who has leadership, you won't be able to recognize it. Just like Carell was saying, he understands building houses and he can walk into a home and know if the house was built well. Because it's like you have to be able to distinguish it. It's almost like you have to have a distinction. So imagine if you are, you go to a martial arts tournament and you don't know if they're doing karate, jiu-jitsu, Jeet Kune Do, Aikido, you just see fighting. You know it's martial arts. But if you're a master in martial arts, you're going to have distinctions that the other person doesn't have. Not only will you have, as a master, not only will you be able to distinguish, oh, man, that guy just switched from kung fu and he switched to something called bando, now he's doing karate, well, you know, you're going to know the strengths and weaknesses of each of those. So if you don't develop yourself, then it becomes really hard. And I'm not saying you have to know it on the first date, but like if with Carell and knowing a home, he knows what questions. So how did you all build this house? What did you do for this? Same if you're a master at mechanic and repairing cars. You know what questions to ask. And I think a lot of times people are looking for something in another person that they don't have in themselves, and they sometimes don't know how to distinguish the very thing they claim they want.
Right. Absolutely. What you said you're calling from Atlanta. What did you say your name was, sir?
Oh, my name is Jeffrey Snell. Teddy and I, yeah. My mother and Teddy's mom is like sisters, and that's my auntie,
okay.
And my mother's his auntie, and we brothers. Ever since, I mean, talking
okay.
about one, 2 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe before that.
Yeah, before that. They were carrying each other.
You know,
they were carrying both of us at the same time.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. So you know, Ted, I won't hold that against you, though. So let me ask you this. Let me ask you. The topic tonight is what comes before love and intimate relationship. You're in Atlanta. You know, Atlanta's kind of always been known as, you know, you call it the Mecca, and, you know, I mean, especially for men, you know, they say, you know, you go down there, you see all kinds of women or whatever. That may be true. There's a lot of women in Atlanta. We don't debate that. But what have you seen as far as the dating situation and people in relationships in Atlanta? Give me kind of a litmus test of what you're seeing as far as people connecting and things. What do you know?
Oh my God. Dating is, I don't know. Dating these is kind of difficult these days. It's not like it used to be. And I'm older. Me and Tez are the same age. So I'm not even going to say how old we are. But down here in Georgia, I've been looking. I'm single now. I'm still married, but I'm trying to get a divorce. I'm the first thing smoking. I should have been divorced, but I've been living single for about 10 years now. And I'm in my own apartment, and I've been looking for a significant other for a little while, and I've been all over trying to find somebody to have a relationship with. And I don't know, man, it's just like dating is not what it used to be. Back in the day, we used to be able to get a woman's phone number and call each other and talk. Now, this social media situation and everything, you're breaking up with people online and going with people online, and it's just, we're living in a freaking cyber world or something. I don't know. But it seemed to mess up the whole dating thing. And I know I'm a relatively handsome young man, and it's not that. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm not having luck finding a nice young lady here. As a matter of fact, I'm talking to a young lady all the way over in Ghana, Africa right now. And I'm talking to her, and I'm going to be moving her here and possibly marrying her. And we've been talking, and incidentally, we've been talking online. We met on Facebook, and now we talk on WhatsApp, and we talk on Facebook Messenger video chat. And I said, I'm not even talking to women in the United States anymore. I'm talking to a girl in Africa. Because the ladies in the United States, even what the ones I meet on Facebook or I meet in person, they're always on this, I don't need no man, this type of attitude. And, they're already had married with children, or already dating, got a man or something like that. I don't know. It's like difficult these days. Back in the day, I could have four or five girls at one time. That's a day of yesterday. That's a day of yesteryear. I don't know what's going on these days.
So Jeffrey, let me ask you a question, and I kind of understand where you're coming from. I mean, it's women's fault, and it's not women's fault. We're in a country that basically gives a lot of privilege to women. They don't see it in the court. I take it back. I actually think they know it and realize it, but many of them kind of want to, play like they don't understand what's going on. This is a country that gives a lot of privilege to women, especially in a marriage. That said, you mentioned that you're trying to I don't want to say recruit, but you're trying to, get a lady from Ghana to move over here.
You're right. You got it right. I said I am going to I'm going to have transferred from Ghana, Africa, to the United States. Import a woman she's going to do what I need to get done.
Right. So if you go
because I'm tired of American girls.
Okay, and that's I know men who are that way. They're like, I mean, we talked about that before. A couple of shows ago, we talked about MGTOW, men going their own way and kind of establishing their own set of rules, not dating women in the U.S. because of all the, mess that you can kind of get involved with. I get that, no problem. My question to you is, and this is something I kind of propose to a number of men, whether they meet women from Africa, Dominican Republic, Colombia, et cetera, which is this. When you get that woman and you bring her over here, do you not believe that she is going to a lot of the ways that Western women already have now? That's my question to you.
I don't think so, because of the simple fact that she doesn't know a lot of things that goes on over here in the United States. And their culture over there, they're taught by their mothers and their grandmothers or whatever at a very early age. They keep their virginity a lot longer. They are taught to respect their man, treat their man like a king. The man treats the woman like a queen, and things of this nature. When over here, these women over here, they're too busy telling you that they don't need you and all this. And what you guys said it a little while ago. I saw this thing on Facebook where this guy was in tears talking to a room full of women. He was a real handsome young man, so I know they all felt his pain when he cried, but he cried to the woman. Why do you guys always say in these days lately, every time I date these women, they're telling me they don't need me because they can do their own thing, get their own house, their own car, and all these things, and they also they're blaming me for their past relationships that when guys hurt them, and as soon as they get with me, they think I'm automatically going to be just like those guys doing the same thing. Yeah. I'm not those guys. And the guy started crying, right, man, because he was really heartbroken because he's like, I can't even get a girl because she think I'm going to treat her wrong like those other guys that did her wrong in the past. Automatically, they think that. And that's the attitude that they walk around with on a daily basis. And it's not all the women's fault. It's the guys' fault, too. The guys dogged these women out so much to the point that drove them to that situation. But, where do we go from here was the question.
Right. Yeah. You said a lot of that in that statement. But, what are your thoughts, Ted? Because I'll respond, but I want to give you a chance to say something.
So both men and women, I don't care what your age or your race is, it's making better decisions. So one of the things that's critical, and I asked a woman on our show before, have you ever But I asked her if she was certified, if she was a CPA. She said no, she majored in marketing. So because she majored in marketing, she wouldn't be very good if you hired her to be a CPA. So when you think about a relationship, ultimately you really are hiring a person to be part of your life, to share your life, to be part of activities and growing and talking about things. And if you're going to, whether you get married or consider yourself life partners, you're actually building something together more than just having children. Because if you're going to have children, what are you building to have those children be born into? So you're hiring someone, man hiring woman, woman hiring a man. So do people really know, one, are you truly qualified for the person you're hiring? You could be hiring a person who's overqualified for you or not qualified. So if you're a person who doesn't have integrity and you want, you're a guy with no integrity and you want a woman with integrity, you may be doing what Jeffrey just said, is dogging her, and she's going to be angry at the next man. And if your integrity isn't great, you may not even know how to look for someone with integrity. So then you may have two people dogging each other. But ultimately what I'm saying is people really don't know how to have relationships. And if you look at it, it's almost like we're doing brain surgery on one another, because you're doing damage to someone's brain, and now they're being triggered by this mark that you left on them. So my suggestion is kind of like we were talking about a few minutes ago, Blair, about culture. Sometimes you have to take a step back, and I think on our last week, Blair, you said if you're addicted to some substance or behavior, you have to take a step back and look at yourself. And so if you know you really don't know how to have a relationship, it's a great opportunity for two people to come together and learn together, as opposed to trying to control and manipulate the other person. And so you feel like you're protecting yourself, but you're actually damaging yourself and the relationship. So what I'm getting at is, one, develop yourself. Carell was talking about being mentally fit. So what are the things that you do to develop yourself to make sure you really are qualified to be in a relationship with someone? And
Carell, be honest about
your own proficiency and knowing how to manage a relationship. It doesn't make you stupid or wrong. I mean, none of us have come with an owner's manual to raise children or even be in a marriage or be in a relationship. So that if you understand that you don't have the answers in that, it helps you become more open. But I think the problem is people say, well, I know myself and I know what I'm doing, only to find out that they don't, and they just did brain surgery on someone and it was malpractice.
Wow. Good point.
I have an idea. This is Jeffrey. Jeffrey has one idea that we can do. I'm sorry for interrupting, but if you would like to have a good relationship with a young lady, young man, or whatever, you know, the first thing you should try to do, I'm just going old school on you guys, is try to be really, really good friends with that person, or best friends with that person, before you try to take the relationship to the next level. Because I feel that people that stay married well into their 70s or 80s or until they die, the reason why they were able to keep that relationship tight is it wasn't just sex. They were in love with each other, and they were really good friends and companions, and they let no man or woman come between them. And that's how they were able to withstand the test of time. And that's what I feel. So ladies and guys out there, try to be really, really good friends with your person, with the person that you're trying to make a relationship with, have kids with, get married. Be a good friend to that person first. really, and then take your relationship to the next level after you can. And I'm not trying to push moving in with somebody before you're married, because that's not the way it's supposed to be. But that's not a bad idea either. If you're really planning on being with somebody, don't even try to marry somebody if you never lived with them before. Because you can be with somebody and they're going to be one way, and then after you get married, it's a whole different ball game. And take it from me, I've been married for 32 years. I've got children that's 30-something years old. I have 5 grandchildren, okay? And I'm the one that's getting ready to import the woman from that's 25 years old that I'm getting ready to marry from Ghana, Africa, okay? So that's me.
Jeffrey, let me ask you a question. How do you account for... There are a lot of affluent, wealthy people who get married, and they're less likely to get divorced, and they don't start off as friends. And some of those people, when they meet, they don't have much money. They're very average, except what they did before marriage, like they made sure they had the same values, integrity, the same way they thought the same way about raising children and traveling and health. And their own mental development. Those are all the things that they made sure of first, because they knew that they wanted to be in a relationship. So they didn't hide that. But what they did is they actually interviewed or interrogated that person to make sure we're on the same page. And then they moved forward. And if they found they were not on the same page with the person, they didn't move to marriage. They might entertain that person for a short time, but when it came to looking for a spouse, because there are stories of couples who lost everything and were sleeping out of their car, married, or moving back to the guy's mother's house because his company went out of business. So, and they didn't start off as friends. So that's what I'm getting at on this show, is people don't know how to interview someone. You're hiring someone to share your life. And marriage or a life partner, that's going to be the most important decision you make in your life, because they affect everything, your career, your business, your relationship with your children, where you live, your relationship with your family.
They undervalue the
importance of that person in their life.
Ted, I want to say not only the other stuff that you mentioned, but it also affects your mental health. Very important.
Bang. That's everything. You wake up and go to bed with this person. And if you're angry with him every day, you're going to do bad and other things. They affect the way you even see yourself.
Right.
How the world sees you. Is Carell, is he still... Wait, before we see... Jeffrey, stay right there. Carell, I assume you're on mute. Let's see if we have another call. I want to see if we have a woman on the line.
Yeah, we need a woman.
I think the women are scared to call in, but it is what it is.
Nah. No, I bet you.
Yeah,
bet
because they know they'd be hating.
No, I bet you there's a 516 who's got fire. I bet you there's a fiery woman out there ready to come into this.
Well, she needs to come on.
516, but I do have 715. 715. I don't know where that's. Where's 715? 715. Are you there?
I don't know.
Okay. Maybe he or she is just listening. So 715. Okay, now we are going to go to area code 614, which is my area code. 614, you're live and on the air.
Oh, they're breaking up.
All right.
Yeah, they're in a bad area.
Some of the people kind of calling to listen to the show, they don't have, you know, maybe they're not near a computer or whatever to kind of listen in, so they get it on their phone. So anyway, okay. So you were going to say something, Ted. So go right ahead.
No. This is a question. I'm going to assert that integrity is one of the most important things to look for in a spouse. And when I say integrity, I'm not talking about moral values. Integrity is having something whole and complete. So you have to look at the integrity of your relationship, the integrity of your communication. And so there's a lot that you can learn about the integrity of a person. So if I just look at a formal definition, the quality of being honest and having strong, it says, moral principles, the state of being whole and undivided. So if you have a house that's made, the integrity of the house is strong, it's going to be whole, complete, undivided. It won't be shabby. And that's the same thing if you buy a pair of shoes, you know. So if you're in a relationship and you're with someone who doesn't have high integrity, if you're really going to be able to distinguish their integrity isn't great, you really have to have high integrity yourself. That means when you communicate, there's completeness to your communication. You don't just leave the other person hanging and say, I don't want to talk about this, or I'm uncomfortable with this subject. Yeah, if you're really going to have a strong, intimate relationship, you're going to talk about things that are not always comfortable. I mean, how else do you develop that kind of intimacy? And I've asked women some really tough questions who said they didn't want to speak about it that day, but a few days later they would speak to it. They would talk about it. It becomes a concern if they never want to address it, or they say, oh, I don't talk about that. You know, what people get caught up in is you need to know their favorite color and their favorite song. I mean, those things will help you understand the person and how they deal with life and make decisions. Integrity is completeness in how they engage you. If affection is important to you, is the integrity of the affection in your relationship there? You talk about building legacies, and some people talk about roles. You know, relationship is a team sport. So is the integrity intact in the way we work together, cooperate, the roles we play? Do you keep your word? Like, and that's kind of what integrity comes down to. Do you honor your word as yourself? And if honoring your word is, if it's important to you, you're going to pick up rather quickly whether the person you're speaking to honors their word. You can talk about infidelity. I mean, people are so afraid to talk about these things. You don't want to chase them away. You know what? It's better to know this stuff up front. And if the person gets upset and confrontational because you ask them a question, they're telling you a lot about themselves and how they handle adversity or conflict. And that's another thing, conflict resolution. How well are you able to resolve problems between the two of you? Because that's going to happen. There are going to be usually misunderstandings that should never get way off track. I'm going to share, to me it's a kind of a funny story. When I was 27, I met a woman who was somewhere 34 or 35. And I meet her, we exchange numbers, we have several conversations on the phone, which is another thing why you could know some more about someone on a first or second date. If you take the time to get to know them over the phone, and I understand social media, except ultimately you need to be talking to this person. So this woman and I had several conversations. We go out. I lived in D.C., and she was just outside of D.C. in Alexandria, Virginia. I pick her up, and I take her 45 minutes from where I live to Baltimore, the Inner Harbor. Great place. Want to talk about ideal weather. It was about 78 degrees, no humidity, not even a fragment of a cloud in the sky. Perfect. And we're driving 45-hour drive from her place, and the conversation is just as good as it's been on the phone. And we get out, I park, we get out, we go into the Inner Harbor, and I ask her a question. And I ask her something about her, which you would think is logical, right? I'm getting to know this woman. And she did something that I had seen quite often, which was she deflected. Instead of her telling me about herself, she said, oh, yeah, my cousin, here's what he thinks about that, and he does this. So I asked her a question. That's it. I asked her, you know, I notice sometimes when I ask you a question, instead of you telling me about yourself, you tell me about your cousin or your brother or someone else. Man, talk about game over. This woman said, take me home now. Who are you
right.
to ask me that question? I can't believe
right.
you asked me that. So now I've got an hour drive, and this woman is raising her voice at me and saying, you're only 27, and who are you? You're just a young guy, and you wanted to be my boyfriend? That'll never happen. You're just young, and you don't know what you're doing, and you have no right. But, man, I had to listen to this for an hour, and I didn't say anything. It's not the end of the story.
But so, she was guilty, and she was passing the buck.
Well, I don't know, but 9 months later, I'm in an office building waiting to get on an elevator, and bang, it opens, and she's right there. And as soon as she
wow.
sees me, she hugs me and says, I'm so sorry. I threw your number away after you took me home, so I couldn't call you. She said, my cousin said the same thing you said. The difference was my cousin painted little pretty flowers around it before he said it. You were just so direct and blunt. I couldn't tolerate that. I'm sorry. She said I should have never responded. You were right. I do that. And my cousin explained how I do that. And I'm sorry. And then she asked me, so do you need a roommate? She wanted to move in with me.
Because she said you were so handsome, Ted. She said you handsome.
I don't know about
couldn't get
that,
over that.
But,
she couldn't get over that fact.
So I mean, what she told me that day, she said, take me home. She told me a lot about her ability to deal with things when they don't go her way. I know asking the question wasn't wrong in saying to someone, hey, I'm trying to get to know you, and you're not really talking to me. You're telling me about other people. And I understand sometimes people will do that, and it could be a man or a woman who could manipulate someone like that. And you have to really ask yourself, when someone's displaying that kind of behavior, do I really want to move forward with them, or is this a short-term prospect? You know, maybe they're so attractive physically, you like them, but maybe long term, this may not be the kind of person that that you want to be with, because your communication is going to lack integrity. There won't be this completeness in it. It'll be all this choppy. We can't talk about certain things, or I'm hiding things.
Right.
And that was
yeah.
the first date. That was the first date. So you can learn a lot about a person even on a first date.
Right. Right. I've said it on the show before. Anyone that has ever dated me will tell you he asks a lot of questions. And more than likely, I'm going to come back and revisit the same question maybe a year later, not to really try to necessarily trip you up or anything, but I want to kind of, you know, as you understand things more, other questions, you know, become important. So, you know, yeah, it's important to know about the person. It's important to know a lot of It's important to know a lot of things about where their head is. You have to ask them certain things. I have, you know, people ask me questions, and as much as I think I know a lot of stuff, I have to say to myself, okay, that actually makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. So
right.
It's important to kind of get those, you know, questions understood. And it's one of the reasons, and I have a theory on it and everything, and this is going to sound really like being a jerk, whatever, but I think a lot of women don't really want you to ask a lot of questions, because then you start getting to the answers, and then you start to say, oh, so you used to do X, Y, Z. And so they don't want that to happen, and you just start putting two and two together. So rather than have to admit, I've done this, or I've done this, or yeah, I really did that back in the day, rather than do that, they typically just kind of cut you off at the pass and make it uncomfortable for you to even ask any questions and seem like they're offended
right.
by it. But what you yep. have to do as a man is you have to push past that. You either have to push past and say, you know what, you know, I don't ask a lot of questions. I'm not asking anything that's going to incriminate you. But if we don't get to the bottom of this, you may need to find someone else that can be okay with not asking questions. So that's a go-to that a lot of women use to kind of keep men at bay, is they just seem like they're like, oh, I'm so offended. Why do you need to know that? You know, everybody's got to say, well, yeah, everybody's got to pass. Well, now answer my question. So, you know, but at the same time.
Exactly, exactly.
It's also incumbent of men.
I think that's where that potential liar come in at. I think that's where that protective liar comes in at. You know, I believe, in my experience, again, as minimal as it's been with women, that if you tell them things that are flattering or things that make them feel good, then you accept it. But you know as well as I know, men tell women whatever they want to hear, just get in the panties and then I'm out.
Right.
And
most. That's what got us into trouble in the first place. That's dogs.
So when a woman grows up with that, let's say from 12 years of age up until like in their 20, late 20s, early 30s, and they grow up with only accepting men who tell them things that are flattering. And then so that's how you end up with jokers. Jokers tell you things to make you laugh. Jokers tell you things to make you feel good. But when you get to your late 20s and your early mid-30s, and you're still single as hell, and all men ain't shit, but you're the only constant in that equation, you're the common denominator, it makes you wonder, right? It makes you wonder. And all your friends are getting married, you know, the women that you thought were lame, and girl, she's selling now, she shouldn't be doing but the protective liars. So as men, we got to stop being protective liars. You know, if you want to just have a sex night, just have a sex night. Tell the women you want to have a sex night. If you are ready for a full-fledged, committed, qualified relationship, then you need to tell them that. If they don't want those things, move on.
Right. Exactly.
But then it's kind of hard out there with the Me Too movement. They even tell a woman, hello, good morning, how are you? You're beautiful today.
Let me get in here and say this, because we got about 2 minutes left on the show, and I want to, you know, I don't want us to kind of get, you know, that thing where we get smashed in as far as time or whatever. So, Ed, what are your closing thoughts?
We've said this before, and I don't want to make it seem like we're talking about the same thing over and over, but it's absolutely essential to know yourself. You know, a question to ask yourself, it's easy to say, how do you know if someone has integrity? But the real question is, how do you know if someone has a higher level of integrity than yourself, that you're interested in them? And if their level of integrity is higher than yours, what do you need to do to develop yourself, to get yourself up to the same level of this person that you're interested in? Well, maybe you're just out of your league. And I know women like to often think the guy is there to entertain them, but if a woman is not interviewing the guy, then you may not be qualified for that guy, because you need to find out who he is.
Absolutely, absolutely. So thank you, fellas, very, very much for calling into the show this evening. Terrell from Atlanta, and what was your name again, sir?
Jeffrey.
Okay, I was already called you Jeremiah, and I knew that wasn't right. So I'm glad I
Jeffrey.
Thank you, Jeremiah. So, yeah, thank you both for calling in. Also, kind of aside down everything, I want to give a shout-out to the family of Ernest Davidson, also known as Nipsey Hussle. While we were on the show, he was shot dead in a clothing store. He's a known rapper. For those of you who don't know, he's a known rapper. He was actually dating Lauren London. He was shot dead this evening. We just want to give a special shout-out to the family. Yeah, yeah. Wow. He's 33 years old, man, just doing nothing. He's one of the good dudes, too. So that's a
yes, he was. He was doing a lot for the community. Doing a lot for the community there.
Yeah, yeah. So shout-out to him. Thank you all for calling. Thanks very much for the show. Have a great week, everybody.
You too,
hey,
guys.
Thanks, everyone. Yep, thanks for calling, guys, and thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next Sunday. Thank you. Goodbye.
All right, guys. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.